Blog Talk Radio.
Now Rosie's calling treason on President Trump, demanding that he be pulled out of office. And the protest movement is being led by none other than Barack Obama, which is a fact that has been established already. And so we have a popular coup, possibly, or some kind of crazy goings on that are unbelievable. And so we need to get ready to hunker down for more of this nonsense. Rosie O'Donnell is one of the most unhinged people that I've ever seen. And I know that she's an unfit parent because her daughter who ran away said that she doesn't even live in the house. She didn't even spend time in the house for the most part of the house where her adopted kids are. She lives next door in another house she bought where she goes over and does painting all day and smokes pot until the cows come home, and that she just absolutely stinks of marijuana all day long. And she has no parenting abilities, but she's out claiming that Trump has committed treason. He's got to be removed. But a bigger problem, anybody can discount Rosie O'Donnell and her epic 30 burger dinners. But the real problem here is that Barack Obama has been supposedly talked into fronting the resistance by none other than the diabolical Jarrett. And so she's moved in to the house, and she lived with the Obamas for 8 years. And supposedly Obama did not make any decisions without talking to Miss Jarrett, and who resembles a hyena for some reason. But anyway, here is for you Rosie O'Donnell, that I had heard she had put in for grazing permits in Canada so she could move herself and her family over, but I think she's still in town. Check it out. And I do apologize, she uses some foul language, but I'm going to try to bleep it out.
It's a rainy night here in Washington ahead of President Donald Trump's address to Congress.
Entertainer Rosie O'Donnell gathered with progressive activists outside of the White House for an anti-Trump protest. I was there for all the action.
During the rally, O'Donnell called for Democrats to stop Trump and work to remove him from office. I asked O'Donnell if she thinks obstruction could set a bad precedent for Democrats in the future.
Will it set a bad precedent?
I have faith that there are Republican Congress people who will stand up and do the right thing. The evidence against Trump in Russia is huge and mounting every day. We see it. He can't lie about it. He's going down, and so will all of his administration. The charge is treason.
So thank you for having me. Peace out, and we will no more war for the USA. No more making war on other people for our country. No more doing that, Donald. It's a shitty idea. Thank you very much.
Hi, guys, watch your step. Watch your step.
Rosie, he ran against the Iraq war. Why did you say what you said about Iraq, about his war policy?
Hold up, watch it. Hold up. We do not have the light. We do not have the light.
Brad is an anti-war Republican.
Does he look like he's doing anti-war stuff to you?
Well, we haven't gotten involved in any other conflicts yet. He's only been in office a couple of weeks.
That I'm aware of. Open your eyes. Surely you can draw your own conclusion. There's enough evidence at this point, right?
Well, I
are you a reporter?
Yes.
What's your job?
I report the news. I report everything.
Who do you work for?
I'm with
Ted Goodman, Daily Caller. Ted Goodman, Daily Caller. Do you think it's anti-Trump?
That's not actually the way to do it.
Excuse me. Stop.
To just yell. So you wait right there.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask you what, in general, why you thought when he ran, it was wrong to say what he said about. Well, war.
We got
because you're saying that his war policy.
I have always been vehemently anti-war. My whole life and career. I watched Vietnam on the news. I am adamantly anti-war and have always been. And you can.
Rosie O'Donnell. I guess she's not afraid of Trump anymore. She was afraid of him when he said he was going to sue her back to the Stone Age. But in the meantime, Barack Obama's close confidant, Valerie Jarrett, has moved into his new D.C. home, which is now the nerve center, for their plan to mastermind the insurgency against President Trump. And this is from the Daily Mail UK, which has more honest reporting than anybody here. Why does Barack Obama get a free pass for every stinking thing that he does in his entire life? Obama's goal is to oust Trump from the presidency either by forcing his resignation or through his impeachment, a family friend tells the Daily Mail. Jarrett has moved into the 8,200-square-foot, $5.3 million Kalorama mansion to work closely with the former president and Michelle Obama. Jarrett lived in the White House, dined with the Obamas, and helped shape his domestic and foreign policies. Obama cannot use his West End office, a post-presidency perk, for political purposes. He's coming and he's ready to roll. Former Attorney General and complete goofus Eric Holder said yesterday about the former president's reentry into the political scene. So obviously Obama is still some sort of a god to these people, despite his epic failures. And so he's being helped by Valerie Jarrett, who is probably the least qualified advisor I've ever heard of. She was just a slumlord in Chicago. But her father was a doctor with deep ties into Iran. I think she's part Iranian, but I have to look that up. And, okay, so here's what they say. The family source speaking off the roll, off the record, says no longer the most powerful man in the world. He was just observing Trump and not liking what he saw. He was weary and burned out after 8 years of attempted progressivism and presidential decrees. But Valerie convinced him that he didn't have any choice if he wanted to save his legacy. And as usual, he bowed to Valerie's political wisdom and advice. No wonder he had such a crappy presidency. He was listening to that nincompoop. In his only public comments against Trump since leaving the presidency, Obama came out in support of the protests opposing President Donald Trump's executive orders to restrict immigration. And so he said that that was citizens exercising their constitutional right to assemble, organize, and have their voice heard by the elected officials. So, which is a constitutional right. But, I mean, what do you think about this? 523-1450, what should Trump do about this? What should the FBI or the CIA, supposedly works outside of America, but what should the GOP party do about this? And what should the Democrats do? I mean, is this in the best interest of the Democrats? And so the person who they're talking to said he's going to use his immense popularity with half the country that identifies as liberals and progressives. Millions of Americans are energized and ready to take to the streets to oppose Trump. But they need to be organized and have their anger focused and directed. Obama is dismayed by the way Trump is tearing down his legacy, Obamacare, the social safety net, and the welcome mat for refugees he put in place, said the source. Oh, my God. Leaving Jim Comey as FBI director is another thorn in Obama's side. He blames Comey for Hillary losing. He had hoped to write his memoirs, golf to his heart's content. You know, being a man of the people, he spends a lot of his time on exclusive golf courses and bask in the glory of his 8 years in power and the progressive achievements he brought about. Instead, he's going to be leading the fight and strategy to topple Trump. Is this guy misguided? I mean, if he doesn't fit the term misguided, it needs to be stricken from the dictionary. Obama is the most misdirected and undermining and passive aggressive and antagonistic to America's ideals of any person I've ever seen. So anyway, there's Valerie Jarrett. And so the Obamas, let me throw this out there for you. You might be just waking up here, but the Obamas signed a $60 million deal. Now, I don't know everything about publishing, but I can tell you this. I know a little bit about publishing, and I do know that it would be extraordinarily difficult to make $60 million on a book. So I, you know, that immediately struck me, and I went and looked at it. It's with Penguin Books, and Penguin just did it just joined with another bookhouse to make the biggest bookhouse in the world. But I really think that what they're doing, it just seemed to me that they are giving him some payback they're giving Obama some payback for being such a great lefty. All right, 617 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. And I've got a little clip about this from Trump when we come back. 523-1450 to call in on KOBE. And it is the second day of March. Little Professor Long here, celebrating the Mardi Gras that just passed. Thank you. All right. So what is going on here? I've been meaning to play for you for quite a while how the, and I think I mentioned it the other day, how the left, how Marxism tries to get, make an impression, affect history, choose people that are in office, overthrow governments and all that stuff. Because Islam is kind of, or pardon me, Marxism is kind of like a political variation of Islam. It believes in only one theory, doesn't believe in free speech, doesn't believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and it only seeks power. It seeks total domination. That's exactly what Islam looks for under a religious rubric, I guess you would call it. All right, so here is Trump getting interviewed on Fox about this nasty anti-Trump machine that Obama has put together.
Talk about President Obama. You said you personally get along with him. You guys were going at each other for 3 or 4, maybe 8 years. It turns out his organization seems to be doing a lot of the organizing to some of the protests that a lot of these Republicans are seeing around the country and against you. Do you believe President Obama's behind it? And if he is that a violation of the so-called unsaid president's code?
No, I think he is behind it. I also think it's politics. That's the way it is. And look, I have
Bush wasn't going after Clinton. Clinton wasn't going after Bush.
Well, you never know what's exactly happening behind the scenes. You know, you're probably right or possibly right, but you never know. No, I think that President Obama is behind it because his people are certainly behind it. And some of the leaks possibly come from that group. You know, some of the leaks, which are really very serious leaks because they're very bad in terms of national security. But I also understand that's politics, and in terms of him being behind things, that's politics, and it will probably continue.
Does that disappoint you? Don't you think that goes beyond what we usually do in this
country? I don't use the word disappoint. I'm not really surprised because I understand the way the world works. It's politics. I mean, I'm changing things that he's wanted to do. I mean, we're much tougher in terms of getting the bad guys out. You know, people don't realize he deported a lot of people. But we're focused on the bad people. We're focused on the drug lords and the gang members. We're focused on a very, very bad group that are in this country that we're getting out rapidly. He was much less focused on that.
All right. So he was kind of led into that discussion. I mean, I think this is a very serious issue here. Obama is helping to mount a counterinsurgency. Now, it is not armed. I would assume that these people are, you know, not bearing arms in any instance, but what they're trying to do is delegitimize the president so he can be thrown out. So here's the question: is that illegal? Is what he is doing illegal? All right. So here is from 18 U.S. Code, Section 2385, advocating overthrow of government. Quote: whoever knowingly or willfully advocates, abets, advises, or teaches the duty, necessity, desirability, or propriety of overthrowing or destroying the government of the United States or the government of any state, territory, district, or possession thereof, or the government of any political subdivision therein, by force or violence or by the assassination of any officer of any such government could face charges. I mean, hopefully they would face charges. Now, that is for violent overthrow. Is it illegal? Should it be illegal what Obama is doing? I mean, you can say he has his right to protest and his right under the free speech clause, but I'm just wondering, you know, Donald Trump is a heavy hitter. He is a major player. And his understanding of life, I think, is, you know, he's just had a lot of different experiences. And he says, well, you know, that's life. That's, you know, that's reality, which I think is a healthy attitude. He doesn't seem like he's feeling sorry for himself. All right. Let me play a little bit of a clip. Soros, Marxist, Leninist tactics for communist revolution. Marxism only seeks power. So people who are involved in socialism will advocate in Marxism will advocate various positions that seem to be very principled, but those are stalking horses. They're look at it like a chessboard. Those are pieces that they're advancing, and they don't care what pieces get to the end. As long as they win the chess game, they're not concerned about how they get there. So the left will oftentimes advocate for things that it has no deep commitment to because it's a way to criticize the other side. But anyway, here's a little bit on Soros Marxist-Leninist tactics for communist revolution.
Marxist way. Karl Marx proposition was a very attractive idea.
I chose my friends carefully. The Marxist professors, the Marxist professors, the Marxist professors, the Marxist...
You very often have all kinds of unintended adverse consequences. So I had to experiment. Subversive activity. That was a lot of fun.
The highest art of warfare is not to fight at all.
This guy is a defector from the communist Russia, and he's a former spy.
But to subvert anything of value in your enemy's country, be it moral traditions, religion, respect to your authority and leaders, cultural traditions, anything. Put white against black, old against young, wealth against poor, and so on. Doesn't matter. As long as it disturbs society, as long as it cuts the moral fiber of a nation, it's good. And then you just take this country. When everything is subverted, when the country is disoriented and confused, when it is demoralized and then destabilized, then the crisis will come.
So what is his target now? Us. America.
We need people like George Soros who are fearless and willing to step up when it counts.
That Mr. Soros and his foundations can help to bring more foreign influence into the United States.
I think you put your finger on a very important flaw in the current world order. And that is that only Americans have a vote in Congress.
But the leaders of these groups, almost without exception, claim to be acting in the name of Marx and Lenin. A further analysis reveals that these people are not the product of the working class, which they claim to represent, but come from the privileged middle class and upper class. They're intellectuals with college educations. And in fact, it's within the university environment that they first become steeped in the theories of Marx and Lenin.
Are you one of Lenin's useful idiots?
Well, I suppose so. I'm a traitor to my class.
I chose carefully. The Marxist professors, the Marxist professors, the Marxist professors, the Marxist professors.
The Marxists tend to be the theoreticians. The Leninists are the doers, the ones that go out and make it.
All right, just very briefly, the difference between Marx and Lenin. Marx is the guy that wrote all this stuff, so he was an academic. Lenin was, he was trained as a lawyer, but he was really a rebel. And so he was the first person in history to take Marxism and apply it to, in actual practice. And so Leninism is the tactics of the overthrow. It's a tactics of revolution, which Marx's number one principle was revolution. And then Leninism is to use Marxism, Marxist tactics, to overthrow a government, establish a tyranny of what he called the proletariat, or what the guy was just saying, intellectual leadership. And then it's, in theory, someday these leadership by the intellectuals will be set aside. The people will rule themselves. But the only thing that ever happens is that there's a tyranny established.
Happened. In the meantime, what they were building was socialism, they said. And those people called themselves Leninists. This is one of the basic strategies of Lenin. Well, if you were to go into a country that we're trying to take over, and those people had a strong culture, strong nationalistic feelings, they didn't want to give up their history and their nationalism. So what do you do, comrades? Do you go in there and tell them that that's stupid? Do you go in and preach internationalism that we know is the way of the future? So, no, of course not, because they would reject you. You go in and tell them what they want to hear. Be the best nationalist leader there. Let them follow you, thinking you represent them, so that you can come to power. Once you're in power, he said, then you can betray them. One of the theories that Lenin taught was the strategy of a feigned defeat or feigned retreat in order to lure your enemy into a vulnerable position. And this is not original with him. This, you can find this in the history books. I discovered that strategy brilliantly taught by Tamerlane. Sun Tzu taught it in his famous little treatise on Art of Warfare, but Lenin applied it to the strategy of diplomacy and politics.
Wow.
You see. And he said, therefore, let us pretend to be defeated and destroyed so our enemies will lower their guard. And it worked. And of course, the West came in with money and investments, and then after a while, they built their industry up. They saved themselves from collapse so they could stay in power. And this is what he said, do whatever you must do to achieve and maintain power. So they got to that position, and then they changed their voices again and said, okay, we're going to kill the capitalists. And they expropriated all of the property that had been invested and so forth. They've done that several times in history. And so when I saw this so-called breakup of communism, I said, well, there they go again. You see? But people don't know this history. They don't know the strategy of Lenin. If you know the principles of the great leader Lenin, what he's really saying to his followers is, hey, comrades, this is the game we're playing. We're going through this cycle one more time so that we can consolidate our power and lull opponents into an indefensible position, make him vulnerable so that we can smash him with our clenched fist, is how he used to say.
Terrorism, of course, is integral with the revolution. I mean, Lenin was a terrorist. Trotsky's a terrorist. The Cheka, the predecessor of the KGB, the founder of the KGB, was one of the most evil men ever to have lived, called Felix Dzerzhinsky.
Yes.
And you might be interested in the following interesting fact. Guess what Felix Dzerzhinsky's birthday is? 11th of September.
So, hold on a second here. I don't know if you can really hear this, but those are just some basic principles I wanted to get out there. There's a movement, and the movement is Marxism, and Marxism has been extremely influential for the past, say, 150 years when it was created. And a person who is not in favor of general nationalism or religion, Christianity, Judaism, whatever, a person who is opposed to capitalism, a person who has a rebellious attitude about life could quite easily fall in with these ways of thinking, because that's what is taught in the university system and has been taught for decades. Now, it was the plan of the Marxists when they came to America through the Frankfurt School to infiltrate the university system and Hollywood and all these places. And they've been very successful at that. And so the family is absolutely atomized now, and they've achieved one of their big goals. We're going to come back. I'm going to talk about something that I think is a result of this, of these revolutions, loneliness. 634 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. We'll be right back. All right, so there is some information that's come out about Jeff Sessions, who's the head of the Justice Department now, is that he had two meetings with the Russians. One was brief and the other one was a little bit more, but he said that they, in the last year, and that he said that it had nothing to do with the Trump campaign. And so now he's being asked to recuse himself from the investigation into the Russian leaks or the Russian hacking, whatever it is. All right, so an article just came out. Loneliness on the rise. 1 in 8 people have no close friends. I think I mentioned this yesterday, but 13% of people who live in the UK are lonely, and so anyway, I heard about this and I started to kind of think about it. It's something that I've noticed, is that we live in a society now that friendship is not as prominent as it used to be. And so why is that? And, you know, and a lot of the people that I interact with, I mean, I'd sometimes have people, I just had somebody come to the office and bring me some books on evolution and stuff, which was appreciated. Thank you. And a few eggs. Thank you very much. Chicken eggs, if you're curious. And, but, you know, for the most part, I would say the people that I interact with, other than a few people that, you know, I consider friends or acquaintances, virtually everybody that I interact with is, you know, seeking something. And so, and I know that's human nature, is we go out to try to get our needs met, our perceived needs, our wants, whatever. But I think that there is has been a change in how people interact. And I think a few things have happened is people have less art about getting their needs met. They're less charming, let's put it that way. They're less interested in the other person. It's an instrumental relationship. You have something, you have a thing or an ability that I need. I'm going to go and get that from you. And I do think that this generation that's coming up has been raised with, to a certain extent, the art of charm and manners is kind of eluding some of the younger generation. And, you know, a lot of these people, if you talk to them, why aren't you a little more polite? Why don't you say please and thank you? Why don't you go out of your way to cultivate relationships so that when you have needs, you'll already have a relationship in which these needs would more properly or easily be met? And why don't you view other people as an end and not a means? You know, if everybody is an instrument in your life, then you probably don't have a lot of close relationships. And I think that has been cultivated in the culture through various things. The sex revolution put out the message, put out the information that sex is an activity. It's not a relationship. And that, you know, you can find people to meet your sexual needs. And when that is inconvenienced or over, then you can move on to somebody else. Now, I'm not saying that everybody is out looking for friends with benefits, but I am suggesting that we've disconnected sex from relationships in such a way that it de-emotionalizes those acts and it takes them outside of the relationship. And I think it makes them seem, I mean, at least in the culture to me, it makes them seem somewhat absurd. You know, sex outside of a relationship is kind of ridiculous, even though, you know, as human beings, it might be something that we have a natural inclination to think about occasionally. And some people seem to have devoted their lives to these things. Bill Mayer gets up and talks about what a terrible person that the president is, and grab women by the anatomy, that type of thing. He's been indicated to have stated similar things at the Playboy Club, where he was a constant member. And, in addition to that, he's involved in a swingers club. Now, why does a celebrity have to join a swingers club? And I think part of it is no strings attached sex. That I think one problem for celebrities is getting compromised. You have a assignation with someone and then it blows up in your face, you know. So anyway, I think we're living this time when relationship is devalued. And so when you go to court, you see people that have been married for decades and they're getting a divorce and there's no emotion. And that's a result of, in part, I think, no-fault divorce. But another part of it is that we've desacralized relationships. There's no longer a sacred or a moral or an ethical part. You interact with people, including your spouse and your family, as long as they meet your needs. When you don't perceive that they're meeting your needs, you move on. So anyway, Let's come back and talk a little bit about loneliness. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. It's on the rise. And what does that mean for us? 523, 1450. It is the second day, January, February, March, and 6:43. All right, so it kind of reminds me of when I was a kid. We would, you know, I had a park across the street from my house, and I played a lot of, I played sports all the time, you know, so football, baseball, basketball, anything that we could do. And, you know, sometimes you'd go to somebody's house and knock on the door. Is so-and-such there? Do they want to play football? You know, that kind of thing. Or sometimes you just go up and introduce yourself to people. And so there was this, just kind of think back, there was the time of the nuclear family and the mom and the dad got together and had, you know, married and had kids. And sometimes they'd have a kid before they got married. But mostly that was just how it was done. The idea of women going out and having kids on their own, well, it was always a possibility, and there were single mothers, but that was seen as a shock. It was a, you know, people were scandalized. And you grew up in a family, and because you were in this intact family, you learned how to socialize within your family, and your parents, in theory, would teach you to be polite and how to interact with each other. And then you'd be interacting with the kids next door and kids at school. Anyway, that basic model is gone. And I don't see that anything has really taken its place, except a bunch of platitudes and philosophies have kind of squeezed in. We do have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Marty.
Hey, Marty. Hope you're doing well. And what's on your mind?
You kind of swerved into a really interesting topic this morning. And what I would broadly define that as the coarsening of society that you and I have seen in our lifetime.
Right.
For you, you know, I can't speak for you, but I'm in my 50s. And I'm from a time where, if we would have walked into, say, a restaurant as nice as the Red Lobster and saw a guy eating dinner in his undershirt with his hairy armpit, you know, the hair sticking out from under his armpit.
Yes.
We would have went straight to the manager. My dad would have just went straight to the manager and said, what are you doing? And yet that's what I witnessed now. The last time I was at the Red Lobster. That's just one of many, many examples that I could give. The other is that a flight that we were taking to California about 4 months ago.
Uh-huh.
The two guys behind us were drinking beer. I don't know if it was the alcohol influence or what was going on. They're dropping the F-bomb, and I have children.
Yeah.
You know, one's a tween and one's a teenager, and then so on and so forth. I have children that should not be exposed to being the F-bomb being dropped. And the stewardess, we're calm flight attendants now, excuse me. The flight attendant, instead of saying anything to him, gave him a free beer. I'm just blown away constantly because I just wasn't raised in that type of culture.
Uh-huh.
So, now I want to ask you a question.
Well, let me ask you
my three best friends.
Marty, hold on. Boil it down for us. You just gave us two anecdotes. What do they mean?
They mean our society is coarsening and it's not getting better. Instead, we're going into a more savage or primitive state, and we're going away from civilization. That's right.
Sure.
Civilized men don't sit behind women and children and drop the F-bomb repeatedly on a flight where you're stuck and you can't get away from them for
uh-huh.
3 solid hours.
Yeah.
Civilized men don't walk in with undershirts into a nice restaurant.
All right.
$25.
Yeah, true. But Marty, I'm running out of time here. It's towards the end of the first hour. So what should we take away from your observations?
Well, you know, you make a great point there because I'm not coming up with any solutions, am I?
Well, no,
for
but
me, I think we need to get the Lord back in our life. But, you know, when I say things like that, people just call me a Jesus freak and dismiss me. But that's what's missing. People want to have a centralized Lord in their life, in terms of being able to have guardrails on their behavior.
All right.
And that's what Catholicism does for me. It puts guardrails and gives me a clear set of rules to follow.
All right, Marty. I'll develop that a little bit. Thanks for the call. Have a good day.
All right, bye.
All right, folks. So I have a religious view of life, and that I think there's a God, and God sent his word to us, and this is another thing that I've got a beef with, is that evangelicalism is kind of, all of evangelicalism is enthusiastic about the gospel and everything. There was a failure in the evangelical movement to have an intellectual aspect to it, even though there's certainly intellectual evangelicals out there. But if you had gone into a Christian bookstore, now the biggest Christian bookstore in the United States had just noted that it's shutting itself down, but going out of business. But most of the books that are in Christian bookstores are trash, and intellectual trash. They might have truths in it, but poorly written, poorly researched. That's my experience. And when I was a kid, I didn't even know there was an intellectual movement in Christianity until I got older and realized it was very robust, but it was not necessarily big. But I think that, so what's the problem? I think what happened is that the Christians boiled down everything to just, the four spiritual truths or whatever, or the gospel or whatever. And instead of understanding that there is this diffusion that happens in the society when people believe and they get their ideas and they apply them in their work and they apply them in their private life, and there are institutions that are built up out of that. And these institutions are very crucial. And one of the institutions, by the way, is the family. And of course, evangelicals are enthusiastic about that. But I think that there was a way of life that we have lost, in which the mothers taught the daughters how to be women and the fathers taught the sons how to be men. And there was a certain amount of wisdom. There was, there were tricks to making it in life. There was ways to understand the opposite sex. There was how to develop your masculinity, how to develop your femininity. And that, to a great extent, has been lost. And I think part of that is socializing. I think it's a very confused time to be alive. And I was just looking at this article that is, why teenagers feel more lonely than the older generation. Young adults are 3 times more likely to spend most of their time alone than the retired, which is shocking, because retired people are more in a group of individuals that have lost through death and attrition and everything. So I believe that we're raising a group of people that are instrumental in their thinking. They're looking at other people. They're not saying these are, use Marty's example, these are not people that are built in the image of God that I need to love, which is kind of the Christian theory. These are people that have stuff that I need, and what I need to do, and this is what we talk about all the time, the sense of expectation or entitlement. I need to let this person know that they have something that's going to meet my needs, and we need to go through this transaction where I come up and tell them I have a need, you can meet my need, you need to meet my need. There's no charm in that, but there's really... it's not just charm. There's no appreciation for the reality of what's going on. Is you have two people that have needs. You have two people that have an ego. You have two people that have a personality and a sense of humor. This could be a rich human interaction. But as we've all experienced from people that are entitled, you're just there to meet their needs. And once you meet their needs, you can get the hell out of their way. And it is really... kind of breaks the human spirit when people go through those type of interactions. And it is not why we're here, and it does not make people happy. So that's why there's more loneliness. People don't know how to make friends because they were not raised in a friendly, in a charming or courtly or in any kind of in that kind of an environment. And so these are skills that are hard to teach yourself. It's like these babies in Russia that were raised without parents, and they were just in incubators, and they came up and squirted some milk in their mouth every couple of hours, and they never picked them up. They never talked to them. And these kids turned out to be psychopaths or mentally ill, or some of them even died because they weren't talked to and touched. That's like the generation that we've chosen to build here. And I'm absolutely flabbergasted, because it is an enormous source of frustration and loneliness and unhappiness. 656, we'll be right back. Here is a late clip from Crossway, How Loneliness Drives Escape from Reality.
When we feel lonely, when we're aware of that sort of emptiness, we want to get away from it. We don't like how it feels. We feel guilty that we're harboring those feelings, or that they're in us, and we don't know how to process it or what to do. And if no practical solution presents itself or is readily available, we just want to check out. We just want to get away from those lonely feelings however we can. We go home at the end of the day, and we can just check out in front of the television. We can eat. We can drink. We can, you know, people take sleeping pills. Whatever it is, when we're lonely and we don't know what to do with those feelings of loneliness, escape seems like the only solution for us.
So in any event, we'll take a break here, but I do think it's a huge deal. And that we've got to come up with an answer, because these kids are growing up now emotionally impoverished, which is every bit as debilitating or more so than food deprivation and such. We'll be right back after a break on the hour. Have Ben Rossin calling in. Hey, it's Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly. This is Ben. How are you?
Good, man. How's it going?
Good. Is this the right number to call in on?
Yeah. What did you want to talk about?
Well, I'm up in Santa Fe, so I figured I'd talk about just being up here lobbying our legislators about primarily about the voter consolidation, or the election consolidation. That's probably the biggest thing to talk about. Probably keep it relatively short unless we get any questions or you have anything.
Okay. All right. So we're going to be on the air in about a minute. So.
Sounds good.
Are you
having the first hour go?
Great. Wonderful.
Good.
Unparalleled.
Yeah. The 1450 doesn't reach up here to Albuquerque or to Santa Fe. Excuse me.
That's a shame. Well, we're getting into the last days of it anyway. Should be at the end of this month.
Yeah. That's too bad. Have you thought about continuing on, or just getting some more sleep, or what have you decided?
Sleep.
Yeah.
We got this starting right now.
Okay.
With Kelly O'Connell and AM Las Cruces on KOBE.
Well, good morning, and thanks for tuning in. If you're just tuning in, we're about to do the Rossin Report, a special Rossin Report that's going to be called in from Santa Fe, and Ben Rossin is up in Santa Fe doing some special stuff. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Kelly.
How you doing?
Doing well, Kelly. As you mentioned, I'm up here in Santa Fe working with state legislators today, and then we'll be back down in Cruces tomorrow, but there's a lot going on up in Santa Fe that is a county that we're paying attention to. And so up here, making sure that our legislators know what issues are important to the county.
Okay. And so fill us in.
Well, you know, Kelly, one of the important ones that we passed a resolution on Tuesday at the county commission meeting is in regards to consolidating elections. for those people who don't know, in the upcoming 16 months, we've got a total of, I think there's 12 different elections that will happen. And so each one of those elections happens on a different day. It has different group of eligible voters. And then it also has different parties responsible for running the election. For example, of course, we just had the school board election recently. We've got the municipality election for Hatch and Anthony coming up and Sunland Park. We have then we have the soil and water districts elections, and they just go on and on with a lot of these smaller type elections. And as we saw from the turnout in the school board election, Kelly, which I think had about a 3.5% voter turnout, not a lot of people turn out to those elections. And so our clerk, Scott Kraling, has been working on this for a long time in trying to consolidate those smaller elections all into November on the off year so that everyone knows exactly when to vote. So instead of having 12, 13, 16 different elections in a two-year period, we would end up with a primary and general election one year in June and November, and the following year just a November election, which would have all of the small called nonpartisan elections combined.
Cool. So what is your take on the whole thing?
I think it's a really good thing, Kelly. I introduced a resolution on Tuesday with Scott Kraling to say this is something that the county needs to support. I think it will make it much easier for people to vote in elections and be aware of the elections. It'll get rid of, you know, like the Doñana Soil and Water Conservation District. There's no early voting in that election, and so all the voting has to be done the day of. And so it'll make all the rules be the same since we turn that into one election. You know, Kelly, technology has advanced a lot since when we used to have pre-printed ballots, and you'd come and get one of those pre-printed ballots. As any voter knows now, you come in and you get a specialized ballot printed for you. And so we can do that much easier now with newer technology than we could 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Print on demand.
There we go. That saves some costs. You don't have as much waste, but it also gives individualized ballots. So whereas if we would have tried to do this without that technology, Kelly, you'd have people filling out 10 different ballots, and that wouldn't make any sense either. But now that we can consolidate that onto one ballot, that's a good thing for the community, I think.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate you going up there. Anything else that we should be aware of?
No, Kelly, if anyone has something they want to make sure I mention to a legislator, give me a call. My cell phone number is 649-4153. That's 649-4153. And I'm here to represent you. So if there's somebody out there that says, hey, this is important to me, let me know so that I can do a better job representing you on it.
Fantastic. Any more word on the Flying Dutchman, the ghost fleet of Dona Ana County?
No, I'm sure we'll see some of that come up soon, Kelly. I will tell you that some of those buses are starting to need some significant repairs already. And so this is going to be an expensive venture, and hopefully the new commission will decide to go a different direction.
Well, think about how expensive it would be if there were actual riders, and you'd have wear on the seats, and you'd have more weight, and, you know?
Absolutely. You know, I think for the month of January, their self-reported numbers were I'm trying to remember. I think it was 200 and, well, I better not. I'm going off of memory, but they did not gather very much revenue from January. And that's kind of been the same thing, is there's not a lot of ridership that's on there. And even when they talk about, hey, we've got 200, we've got 400 riders, you got to look at that and go, okay, but you count a rider multiple times. If you pick a rider up in Chaparral who goes to Anthony, who goes to Las Cruces, and then comes back the same route, that individual is counted as four distinct riders when it's really only one person. So you just have to watch the way they play some of the games with the ridership numbers.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Well, thanks for the call, Ben. Was there anything else? I know that you're probably a little preoccupied up there.
I am. I do want to mention one thing from a Ross and Builder Supply standpoint. This coming weekend, visit us at the Home and Garden Show at the convention center. We'll have a booth there along with many other people to help you with your home needs, home and garden needs.
And then the following weekend, March 10th and 11th, Friday and Saturday, we'll be having our big annual clearance sale. So I'll talk some more about that one next week as well. But if you're looking for any doors or windows, it's a great time to come out there. We'll have doors starting as low as $5. And we've got windows, any aluminum, any size, any color, any fixed aluminum window, $25 or $30, and then four for $100. So it comes out to $25 if you get four of them. So some great savings on some projects for you.
Fantastic, Ben. Thanks so much for taking the time to call us, and thanks for representing us up in Santa Fe.
Absolutely, Kelly. You have a great day.
You too. We'll be talking to you next week.
Sounds great.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks. So there's Ben Rossin's report. Now, we'll take a break here. But two women accused of killing Garden City teen over big booty comment. A young man was shot in the head after he made a snide comment about the size of one of the women's derrieres where he was at. And this kid was in high school, and it was Sharnia Diamond McCoy, 21, and Erica Italy Osborne, 25, are expected to be arraigned today, I guess. They're accused of killing 17-year-old Reginald Ramon Robinson, February 24th in Detroit. He was shot because he was engaging in a heated exchange inside a store, the prosecutor's office said. And the teen's friend said that there was a gas station when a man didn't know. Pardon me. It said Fox 2 News reported that the teen's friend said that they were in a gas station when a man they didn't know made a comment about one woman's big booty, which caused the teens to laugh. The friend told Fox 2 the women apparently thought the boys made their remark. Wow. I guess she would say that's overreaction. All right, let's take her a little break here and come back and talk about this. I got a lot of different stuff to talk about, but somehow this all kind of makes sense. It all kind of fits in. Talking about loneliness and the cause and maybe the cure, according to Marty, it's God. But 714 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450. The second day of March. I had to count on my fingers. We'll be right back. Seven 19. So, been talking about loneliness in a new article that just came out that said about 13% of people in the UK had said that they don't have any friends, nobody that they can confide in. So, I mean, one of the most enjoyable or most needed things in human society is the need for a counselor or someone to listen to your problems. And of course you can always pray or you can keep a diary or whatever, but I think people are increasingly coming to the conclusion either by logic or by just instinct that the culture that we're living in is not oriented towards friendship. And to a large extent, it is what will you call I'm trying to think of another thing at the same time here. I'm kind of multitasking, but instrumental. When I meet people, when I spend time with people, when I interact with people, my purpose is instrumental. I want to get something out of them, and I think that is, you know, not only is it very frequent and common, it's kind of this default, but you know. It's also unpleasant, you know. Let's kind of go where the rubber hits the road. And so there's a lot of things that are associated with loneliness, and I think one of which is child abuse. Now, I believe child abuse has gone up as the nuclear family has fallen apart and people get together and, you know, sometimes women decide to have, they're going to have a child because they want to have a family. And the idea that they need a father there doesn't even rate and then we have people that are living together and they break up. There's a lot of mixed families, and then we have marriage and divorce. And so part of that as well, that puts pressure on the women to have a job, have their own independence. But that means, you know, a woman is independent. She's a mother. That means somebody is helping her with her kids, right? Because so kids are being raised in child care or in the school system. They're latchkey kids, a lot of them. Now, this is also touched on by feminism, which I think is another cause of loneliness in the society. But you have latchkey kids. The kids are in and around institutions, but they're more vulnerable. They're more away from their family. They're more out there and more likely to get in trouble and more likely to be abused. And so studies have shown that the rate of abuse goes way up when women are dating with a guy instead of with the children's father. And step parents are much more likely to abuse children, whether it's, you know, physically, mentally, sexually, than the real parent is, for whatever reason. Well, there's not the sense of attachment and the sense of this is my, you know, product of me. So those kids who get abused, they're either abused physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, or they're abused by abandonment. Abandonment is another form of abuse. These kids grow up with a deep-founded sense of loneliness and as a permanent part of their psyche. People that are lonely are more likely to fall into addictions, substance abuse, things like porn, addicted to porn or any things that take the place of interacting with other people. And then one of the things that they had said in this article here, a couple of articles that I've got it. Why millennials are lonely, and this is from Forbes, and this is from February 9th, 2017, so about a month ago, 3 weeks ago. And then you've got another article that came out, I think, today. No, February 28th, so about three or four days ago. All right, so one of the things that talks about why the youngsters are more lonely is that they're interacting with other people through social media, which cannot be a replacement for human interaction. And so kids grow up without, there's no longer a commitment to the nuclear family. And I think another part of this, and we've been talking about this, is the battle over gender roles. Feminism makes women, kind of encourages women to see themselves as equals to men, but also in a relationship, in a struggle for power and domination within the relationship. And that is alienating for a lot of men. I think it's alienating for women too. But feminism also focuses on more masculine traits, that women should be more logical, more aggressive, more success-oriented. And so you've got that kind of working in. So you've got kind of this mix of all these things. Now, what Marty brings up, Marty called in and said, what's missing is God. So church membership is down. Church attendance is way down. And another thing is way down, which I think is, you know, that the Christian is now encouraged to live in a ghetto, keep your opinions to yourself. And so when we were living in a broadly Christian culture, it would be easier for people to share their opinions or their convictions. And now, after decades of secularism, and we are told the moral thing to do is to separate church and state completely and separate your opinions and your beliefs from your friendships and your work and everything else. So people are living in Christian ghettos. I think there is something to what Marty says, because, you know, Christ's mission, he says he comes to serve. And this is something that Donald Trump brought up in his speech. True love is to lay down your life for another or for a brother. So the guy that was killed in that raid. And we're not really teaching these lessons in the society. And so I think all of these things coming together are taking away a lot of the pleasure. Now, here's one of the things that you have to, I think, believe in to accept this analysis, is that there is such a thing as human nature, that we're built in a certain way, that activities, either more or less, that we engage in either more or less reflect the fact that we have a human nature, or say, according to Marty, that we're made in the image of God, that we have certain spiritual needs and desires. And part of that is the need for community. One of the big issues in the New Testament is the Christian community, but community in general. So as we become more and more engaged in this technological world, we're spending less time face-to-face with people. And so that is another cause of loneliness. It's all coming together, and I think the impact, and 523-1450 if you want to weigh in on this, but I think what is happening is we become increasingly disoriented as philosophies and theories have taken the place of the religious beliefs that Americans used to have. For example, Satanism is on the rise. It's in the paper all the time. But we've lost our thread, our theory of what it means to be human, and all of these other things are kind of flooding in to take the place, and people are increasingly miserable, and it's a cycle. Now, I've got a clip here, millennials turning to etiquette classes to brush up on their social skills. Kids having to raise themselves.
And go back to that FaceTime.
Real FaceTime can be a foreign concept for millennials. Micah Meyer is the founder of Beaumont Etiquette.
We refold it in half.
A company helping millennials polish their manners.
I think overall, the millennial generation is lacking in social skills because they're so used to computers.
In hours, the focus was dating.
There's nothing more impressive than somebody that can eat correctly with their knife and fork.
To avoid embarrassment, Micah says, hold your cutlery like this.
So your index finger goes like that and you wrap. And then the same here, index finger and wrap. And then you twist over. So the prongs of the fork always stay down.
Oh. To take a break, place your silverware down in a V on your plate.
When we're finished, we just put prongs up in the 4 o'clock position.
When you're on a date, Micah says it's all about the little things, from body language and eye contact to the proper way to hold a wine glass.
This is something that people do wrong, especially if it's red wine. So we always say, you hold it at the stem.
As for who pays, this is not your grandmother's etiquette class. Micah says, according to modern rules, it's gender neutral.
Now, which means the person who invites the other person out is the person who should pay.
Noreen Akater paid $75 for the two-hour course, a class that reminded everyone simple human interaction can be the best etiquette of all.
I think that sometimes the etiquette of just like normal interaction face-to-face gets lost.
Micah is hoping to bring that back one etiquette class at a time. Meg Oliver, CBS News.
And they closed that segment with showing somebody writing a letter or a thank you card. That's another reason, you know, there's no thank you. There's no please and thank you. I mean, it's like interacting with robots with a lot of these people. And I'll throw this out to you again. How often when people come up and let you know they're entitled and that you have to give them something, do you actually owe them that thing? I mean, I really think this group of people that refuses to be polite really needs to, you know, have a wake-up call, come to Jesus moment, according to Marty. We'll be right back, 731, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450.
We got Bobby Caper out. Keep on wanting to make this show. We're going down and get my phone. We're going to buy me a birthday coat. I'm going to do anything I do. We been cheap, I'm feeling good.
Let me get you some headlines here, and you've already heard one of them, which is that Jeff Sessions met with the Russians twice in the last year, and he says it was really no big deal. It's part of the government, so that's his theory. He's sticking with it. It could cause a lot of problems. It seems like for the assistance, for the helpers of Trump, the damage so far has been self-inflicted. So Obama administration rushed to preserve intelligence of Russian election hacking. This is more of this movement by Obama to undermine the Trump administration. And so that's just the way it is. As Trump himself said, that's just human nature. Here we go. Here's a call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Oh, hi. This is Christine Congressman Pierce. I just have a question. Do you have a good number to call in terms of when is Casey Counts on in the morning?
Hey, this is the hello. We're on the air. I got to call you back later. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Jeez. All right. The heart attack, not nerve agent, killed North Kim Jong Nam. That's one theory, anyway. Yeah, I think the evidence is he was poisoned to death. Judge rules Casey Anthony probably killed her daughter, but by accident. Interestingly, Biden. Joe Biden says they've got every right to go after Trump, and they need to do it. Joe Biden is far left. One thing to know about these lefties, far lefties, they all believe the same thing, even if they have different personalities. You know, Nancy Pelosi might have a big smile on her face and hiccup like Porky the Pig and, you know, say dumb things like we've got to parachute in to get our health care. But they all believe the same thing, and there's no substance to the leftism, anyway. FBI's Comey claiming that Mexican drug cartels are fueling U.S. heroin epidemic. I'm trying to find some really epic news for you. It may not be an epic news day overall. But the Dems are going after Jeff Sessions. The Republicans hide new Obamacare draft under shroud of secrecy. Well, that's better than the shroud of Turin, which is a very beloved ancient artifact. Magazine, is Trumpism the new punk rock? China expanding its global reach. It's unveiling an armored vehicle slicing laser gun. Maybe they can use that in delis. And now a dreamer got up on TV and boasted that she was here illegally. Or he, I think it was a woman. And immediately after the news conference that she gave, that we're all used to seeing this all the time, people getting up talking about how they broke the law, she was immediately taken into custody. Mexico will take back illegals, by the way. Western snowpack too deep for scientists' measuring devices. Sounds like we need Shaq's help here. Moral outrage is self-serving. Now, I read this article. Let me get into this article in a minute, but I took up some notes on that, and I thought it was interesting. Iranian film hails demise of U.S. Navy in imagined Gulf battle. Valerie Jarrett, the hag of D.C., has moved into Obama's new D.C. home, of course, to tell him what to do. He must have parent issues, right? Restraining order against Black Lives Matter activist accused of threatening police commissioner, of course. A coal mining revival under Trump. Hillary for mayor, signs appearing around New York City. Artificial intelligence scientists gathered to plot doomsday scenario, and I'm going to do something on robots, the attack of the robots tomorrow. Naked prisoners in Philippine jail causing an uproar. And, all right, so looking for anything else here. All right, so I've got one more clip. A 90-year-old guy does 24 pull-ups for his birthday, so that should be your goal. Venezuela down to its last $10 billion. Ironically, I just did that little bit of the show yesterday. All right, here, let me play a little clip for you from the lady that wrote the book that I had a few clips before earlier. Lydia Brownback discussing the largely undiscussed topic of loneliness.
Lydia, thanks so much for spending a few minutes talking about your new book, Finding God in My Loneliness, just out from Crossway. Tell us a little bit about who you wrote the book for. It's called Finding God in My Loneliness. It's not just your own story, but you've written it for.
I wrote it for all the women I've talked to over the last 3 decades.
Point out one thing, and you know, people like Kathy, who doesn't really call in too much anymore, who gets outraged over religious or Christian topics or content, and that's what I don't understand. I don't make it my job to go up and tell other people what they can talk about, whether public or private. The idea that someone would call up a radio station and tell someone who had a show that they weren't to talk about religious subjects or chastise them, I mean, it's, to me, that's just the crazy. And that's why we're at the place we're at right now. We're just, it seems like this culture is so lost, and I would have a tendency to agree with Marty. If you're not imprinted from something positive, you're going to be led away into all the other craziness. But anyway, so what I wanted to say is there's a lot of topics that I search for a good clip to play on the show, and the only ones that I find are religious for whatever reason. And it makes me think that there's a certain percentage of topics that are only addressed by Christians or Christianity pastors or whatever. I find that interesting. But anyway, here's this lady who's written about loneliness.
Myself included in that. Women are lonely. People are lonely. It's the human condition, I think. And often we don't identify that that's what's going on with us. Sometimes there can be this sort of nebulous feeling inside that something's missing. And it's hard to put our finger on the fact that it's loneliness. It's not just single people, people who are alone. It's everybody. So that's who I hope will pick up this book and find out who God is for them in the midst of those feelings of loneliness.
What is it about loneliness, do you think, that makes us want to avoid even talking about the topic? Because you don't hear a lot of speakers at conferences speaking on loneliness. You probably have not heard many sermons about the topic of loneliness. You're right that a lot of us do experience loneliness, but what is it about loneliness in particular that makes us want to not even talk about it?
Well, I think people can feel ashamed of that feeling. They can question why they feel that way. People with very clearly blessed lives will say, why? I have no reason to be lonely, and there's no excuse for me to be lonely. So they try to pretend that they're not, or just keep busy to avoid those feelings. I think there's a sense of guilt about feeling lonely. We are a privileged society, and we know we are. So I think that's part of why it's not talked about more often. I think also people just don't identify that that's what's going on with them.
You know, we're talking about loneliness, but we haven't really defined it yet. I imagine if you just walked up to somebody on the street and said, what do you mean by loneliness, or what does loneliness mean to you? They would say being alone. Is that
right.
The definition of loneliness?
I think that's one of the things I point out in the book, is that there's a difference between aloneness and loneliness. You know, we can have some of the loneliest people are surrounded by others. And there are people who spend a lot of isolated time, and yet they're not lonely. So there's a difference there. I think it's this feeling inside of emptiness or of feeling cut off. It's almost this vague, undefinable something. And that's another reason I think it's not talked about, is that it's hard to put our finger on exactly what it is. What are we describing here? But this is where I think that God comes into play. I think he created us with that sort of void in our hearts. When he put Adam and Eve in the garden, and he said that it was not good that the man should be alone, so he created a wife for him. But he was created. God created Adam with that need and with that void. So it wasn't just a result of the fall, the loneliness. It was how he was created. And so I think that God did that so that we would yearn for him and find our all in him. So I don't think Eve was given, she was not given as a remedy for this deep, deep sense of loneliness. I think she is God's provision, God's design for human beings. But it's really just a foretaste. It's he is the answer to that. So if we didn't have that feeling of loneliness, we would not search for God in the way we do. We would not know our need of him.
So we know Jesus was sinless. What do you think about Jesus's relationship to loneliness? Did he experience loneliness if he was completely content in his relationship with the Father? Would he experience loneliness?
I think as a human being, he did. I think that's why sometimes he would go off alone to be with his Father. God designed us too to be in fellowship with one another. So Jesus, we think about his how he was rejected by people. He was abused by them, misunderstood, and loneliness springs from all those things. So he experienced them. So as a man, surely he did, which is why, and it says he's able to sympathize with all our weaknesses. He lived what we live, so he understands, he knows, and I do believe he lived that. But what did he do when he felt that and when he experienced it? He went off alone to be with his Father, and that's where he turned to find his solace first and foremost.
Introduction to your book starts off with a very evocative word picture of you thinking about Christmas from various different angles and having to do with singlehood and with married life. Maybe you could tell that story.
It was not a time of year.
All right. So, I mean, sometimes I put stuff on and it's got what I would think maybe too much religious content, and I'll cut it. But I mean, the thing is that I'm just kind of fascinated there for as much information as there is on YouTube. There's a lot of subjects that don't have many quality clips on it, which I'm kind of baffled by, because friend James Duane, the guy, the attorney that was the law professor that had come on that people really enjoyed listening to, he had come on the show a while back, but he had said to me one time that there's more video content uploaded every day onto the internet than has been made in the history of Hollywood, which I thought was kind of fascinating. But anyway, so that would, though, tend to point in a particular direction, that there's a lot of issues that secularism, or whatever you want to call it, atheism or whatever, have not really addressed or haven't addressed in a way that people find them to be meaningful. And I can tell you from a political standpoint, secularism that has been injected into the political system has been a disaster. And you can just see that in USSR and China. The insistence of separating church and state historically would destroy the West, because virtually, and from my research, I found this out, virtually every important idea in the history of the West seems to somehow get its audition in the church. And when it's successful in the church, and when the church used to be much more influential and much larger in proportion to the rest of society, then it would have been a no-brainer to take a policy or a theory out of the church, some practice, and then convert it into the secular system. But anyway, getting back to divorce, getting back to loneliness, are we more lonely than past generations? I think we are. How are we dealing with it? I don't think we're dealing with it very well, with our substance abuse and our addiction to the internet, with porn addiction and all the other things that people get addicted to. But think about the things that people use to take the place of having a vibrant interaction with somebody else. They say that the people that are surrounded by others who feel lonely feel the loneliness, feel the most lonely, because of, at least a person who's by themselves has this hope, this glimmer of hope. If they meet the right person, they'll become friends and start hanging out. Whereas people that are surrounded by many other people might feel totally misunderstood or ignored as to their real person inside. They can't talk about who they are or what they experience, which I think is a good argument for keeping a journal, as long as it's locked up, which you can do on your computer. But anyway, I do think that there is something to this notion, and Alcoholics Anonymous deals with this directly. There's something to do with the idea that people need some sort of a divine interaction, spiritual. People have a spiritual life, and it has to be addressed. The reason I bring up AA is, like half the things in AA deal with God, half of these 12 steps. I just printed it up for a client the other day, a client who had a problem with their child, and the child was an alcoholic, and I on some other drugs. She wasn't sure, but I printed this 12 steps up and handed it to her. But I read it before I handed it over again. And I think that, you know, think about this. Why do people develop drinking addictions? What is it? I think part of it is loneliness. It could be fear. It could be a lot of different things. Abuse, child abuse has a big part to play in substance abuse, because people are carrying with them a lot of pain that can't really be addressed without a very pain, probably a lot of painful therapy, prayer, whatever you want to talk, you know, address that with. But I think that there is a certain amount of drinking and loneliness. So there's shame. And this lady talked about this. And I think people feel, you know, we all feel like we should be such wonderful individuals that other people want to spend time around us and be our friends and hang out. And when that doesn't happen, it seems to suggest that we're at some point a failure. But how about looking at it from a different angle? We've not been trained how to build friendships in this culture. It's not valued. And yet, as I was saying earlier, human nature, we have a deep need to express ourselves and connect with other people, at least a few people, and to have our story heard and to, you know, love and be loved and serve other people and be served. And this sense of community is now missing. So let's take a little break here and come back. And then I want to go over this thing that I had mentioned to you, which was this article. I may have gotten rid of it, but let's take a little break and we'll be right back. All right, what I just wanted to add one thing. I'd mentioned the 12 steps. The main step that, and I've talked to substance abuse counselors, people don't get better, or they get better at a much lower rate if there's not a spiritual element in their substance abuse treatment. And the main thing that the 12 steps says is to admit that there's a higher power. And whether there is a God or there's not a God, that at least gives you someone to appeal to see that the universe is bigger than you, and that, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to mention why I had brought that up. All right, moral outrage is self-serving, say psychologists. And all right, so the people that you see out in fury after Trump, self-serving, a lot of them, because they're protesting about how other people are treated. And so let me do this tomorrow, because I got a little clip from, let me go through this tomorrow. I've got a clip here from Jim Gaffigan, Ribs and Bologna.
I like meat, I do. But you know who seems to be really obsessed with meat? Are vegetarians. You know, for people that don't like meat, they seem to eat a lot of vegetables that are mashed up and shaped to look like meat.
I find meat repulsive. I'll have a veggie burger with fake bacon, and can you serve it to me dressed like a cow? I don't like meat. I just like to call meat late at night and hang out. Let's drive by Meat's house. Does meat ever ask about me? I don't care. I ain't missing you at all. Missing you.
Never see that the other way. I will have the steak. And can you make it taste like tofu? My wife refuses to eat meat because she feels it's cruel to animals, which, interestingly enough, is the same reason why I don't eat vegetables. I'm a vegetable rights activist. Except for the potato, they can't feel anything. I do love animals. I've never looked at a cow and thought, I want to eat that. But once that cow is slaughtered, drained of all its blood, chopped up, and put on a grill, I get hungry. Cow. Definitely helps if it doesn't look like an animal. This ham sandwich doesn't look like a pig to me. But ribs, you know, there's no getting around ribs. because they're ribs. It's amazing how casually we order. Yeah, I will have the baby back ribs. And can you wheel that out in the stroller? I'm going to start with the baby chicken legs. I'm going to have an all-baby meal.
Hey, buddy, I used to be a baby.
How do you eat ribs without looking like a caveman anyway? Excuse me while I tear the flesh from this bone. I need the energy for when I club you later on. I like all kinds of meat, even bologna.
I knew he was white trash.
I don't even know if bologna is a meat. I don't think meat's supposed to catch on fire like that. What's interesting about bologna, it's not just a meat, it's an insult. That's a bunch of bologna. You're full of bologna. It kind of implies bologna makes you lie. I eat bologna all the time. Or maybe I don't.
Maybe that's just the bologna talking.
Have you seen the bologna that has the olives in it? Who's that for? I like my bologna like a martini. With an olive. I love the bologna sandwich. Dirty. Everything about bologna is silly. Who decided on the pronunciation of the word bologna? All right, how do you want to pronounce this word? Bologna! I don't know if you saw, there's a G in the word.
I don't see no G. Bologna!
Okay, well, the word does end with an A.
We're going with bologna! Trust me, I came up with Colonel.
You ever been reading and come across the word colonial, like colonial? Someone important? This reading's hard. Where's my TV?
All right, so thanks for hanging out with me today. I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time, this issue of loneliness. I brought it up before, but it just seems so pervasive out there. Here's one more little thing on childhood abuse and loneliness. A fascinating study examined the role of loneliness in the development of multiple psychological disorders in those who had experienced childhood abuse. And so, and that's something that I had noticed when I was doing advocacy out in the mental health system here, representing people who were mentally ill, is I always tried to ask them if they had been abused as a kid. Now, every single one of the people that I asked had said yes. Now, could they have been lying? Yes, I guess. But, I mean, I doubt all of them lied. And, you know, my impression is if you get abused as a kid, you don't have a strong foundation when you grow up like you would have, you know. And I know some people get abused and they become overachievers because they felt rejected, and so they grew up and to tried to prove a point. But I think a lot of the people get abused, and then they never, you know, in the same way you don't feel, you feel this like natural instinct or natural sense of loneliness, you also, these people feel a natural sense of being unloved or unlovable, and it's terrible. But anyway, we will close her off here, finish up with a little Mardi Gras music, which was on Tuesday. Thanks for tuning in. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. And I'm going to have Steve Pierce on tomorrow at 620. So tune in for that and have a great day. Wonderful to spend time with you. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces on KOBE. Ciao.